place of death. So they are very death-oriented. So when they saw the temples full of life, music, dance, revelry, life, they didn't like it. It looked most irreligious to them. They wanted to pull down the temples, but these were too massive. Massive, massive. Massive means you would not imagine buildings like that. I would like a meditation hall like that, but the Egyptian temples are truly massive. Truly massive. The Karnak temple, which is one of the well-preserved lot, which is over 4,600 years old, is something like, I may not be exact on this, I would say it is something like 20 times the Rameshwaram temple that we have, which is one of the largest temples we have. That's how large it is. And in terms of its height, it is running into, you know, really fabulous heights. Above all, what kind of devotion must have driven these people? 4 millenniums ago, to handle rocks like this. Some of these pylons which they have made, which have made them stand up, which have been transported hundreds of kilometers down the River Nile and erected. They are stones which weigh over 400 to 500 tons, running to 27 meters tall. What kind of devotion must have driven these people to do this kind of work? No machines, no trucks, no cranes, just human beings. Takes phenomenal sense of devotion and sense of purpose for anybody to do this. And today French historians are writing that Egyptian culture was connected with the Vedic culture 7,000 years ago. And the builders went from here, from this land. This you can see in Baalbek Temple in Lebanon, which is once again about 4,200 years old. Once again, it's a fabulous, fabulous feat. They don't have any granite in the area, so they brought it from Egypt. They transported it across what is now Suez Canal, and they brought it up through Syria and climbed up the mountains, which is over 350 to 360 kilometers of climb on the mountain, and they put it up there, a huge temple, a Phoenician temple which was built almost 4,200 years ago. And here you will see lotuses hanging from the ceiling. A lotus in Lebanon? There is no such possibility because these are Indian sculptors. So there is history in Lebanon which clearly says Indian elephants, Indian labor, and Indian sculptors came and worked here. And the most amazing thing for me was I saw a 16-pointed stone. Even today when we do the Guru Puja, Guru Puja is essentially, in the yogic parlance, it is known as Shodashopachara. That means 16 ways of treating a guru. That's what Guru Puja is. So usually we have a Guru Puja stone, which we still don't have in ashram because of whatever. We're still putting up the stones, the standing ones. The 16-pointed Guru Puja stone, which is prepared traditionally in a certain way, is essentially from the yogic culture. It cannot come from anywhere else. You will see a proper Guru Puja stone with all the necessary symbols and everything in Lebanon, which is over 4,000 years old. So today, a lot of French historians have published many aspects of history. So pyramids are just one aspect, but they have become very popular because of very death-oriented people. The temples of Egypt should have been celebrated. and the defacement of these temples. Who did such a crime? Even a caveman, if he walks into this temple, he cannot help being overwhelmed. The columns are standing 27 meters tall. Hundreds of them, not one or two. Even if a caveman without any sense of aesthetics walked into this place, he cannot help being overwhelmed. You don't need to be an artist. You don't need to be a connoisseur of art. The crudest human being, if he walks in, he will be overwhelmed by what's been done there. Nobody can miss it. This is the way to build a temple, that nobody can miss it. Temple is not for one specialized sadhaka, that nobody should be able to miss it. That's how overwhelming it should be. And the structure and the ambience of that is as important as the energy of that place, because otherwise people will miss it. They built the right kind of temple as a temple should be built. But these people who defaced the temples, they wrote the history and they talked only about the pyramids. That was fascinating for them. This they wanted to demolish. They would have razed it to ground if they could, but it was too much work. They couldn't do it. Otherwise, they would have just finished it. So pyramids are just one foolish effort towards immortality. We have no such problems in India. We have no longing for immortality. Our whole effort is to end it. Our whole effort is to end the cycle of birth and death. Mukti is the attitude. Nirvana is the attitude. Moksha is the attitude. That's the goal. Immortality is not the goal. So, I have fabulous things to say about Egyptian engineering, but nothing to say about Egyptian knowledge of the beyond. There is nothing much. There is some occult. They created certain things which are beautiful, no question. Not that they were totally ignorant, but the kings are always the most ignorant of the whole population. Always. They are the most egoistic, the crudest, most ruthless. They will become the kings. The gentle, beautiful ones never become kings. Rare is such a human being. Rare is such a culture that once in a way they saw a gentle, beautiful, enlightened king. Otherwise, they were always the crudest, grossest, cruelest, and the most ruthless who became the kings. So, the pyramids were not built for every Egyptian. It was built only for the pharaohs, who were the kings who had a stupid belief that they will come back again and occupy the same old broken body. I don't know why such a wish. There are enough women in the world, you can get into their wombs and come back with a brand new body. I don't see what is the point preserving the body, keeping your liver in a pot, keeping your heart in a pot. And now tourists are gazing at your heart and liver. People are dying to take a picture with a pharaoh's heart. Pyramid is a powerful form because it's preservative in nature.
How to overcome possessiveness?
Oh, okay. Don't try to overcome possessiveness. Just possess something absolutely and see. Once you know the pain of being possessed, trying to possess something, once you know the pain of that, the pain will heal you of possessiveness. You you trying to overcome possessiveness is not going to work because you already tried, isn't it? Obviously you've tried, you failed, and that's why you're asking me. Possess, absolutely. Whether it's your husband or your child or your, even your home or even your dog, try hard to possess it totally. You will see it will bring unbearable pain to you. When it brings that kind of pain, it will cure you. So, why is it that you want to possess? You know, in India or anywhere in the world, if you say somebody is possessed, what it means? The one who is possessed is a victim. But one who possesses, you know who he is? You are just that. When you try to possess, you'll become a devil. No, I love very much. But yes, with good intentions, you will become a devil. That is the problem about possessiveness. Very good intentions. And how do you know? Devil has no good intentions for you. Who knows? How do you know God has good intentions for you? Only the propaganda says so. But you don't know for sure, isn't it? Yes. If all this is God's making, all that's happening in your life, you don't really know whether He has good intentions for you or not anymore, isn't it? No. You know for sure? You know for sure? You don't know. And you don't know whether the devil has bad intentions for you. You don't know. But one who possesses is usually a devil. So with good intentions, when we said somebody is a devil, we did not question his intention. We only are talking about the result of his action, isn't it? Yes? We are not questioning his intention. A devil of a wind. Maybe the wind is blowing with good intention, but because it's devastating your home, you call it the devil because of the result, isn't it? So if the result that you are bringing about is painful, you are the devil. Your intentions may be good, but the result is painful for somebody around you, then you're a devil. So if you manage to possess, you must be a devil. And these victims who are possessed by something else, they can cause hell of a lot of problem to everybody around them. Have you seen them? So, if I tell you don't possess, you are not going to stop anyway, because this is a very deep-rooted problem. This is not going to go away because of somebody's advice. Please don't possess anybody. It's not going to go away. You may shift your objects of possession from this to that, but the longing or the need to possess is not gone. You may shift your object of possessing from this to that. Because your wanting to possess something is essentially coming from a certain sense of unfulfilled experience of life, a certain sense of being incomplete. All you are trying to do is fulfill yourself. I want you to understand. You are not trying to be rich. You are not trying to be ambitious. You are not trying to be possessive. The answer is same for greed, for anger, for hatred. You are not trying to be all this. All you are trying to do is somehow find fulfillment. either by embracing this person, or by killing this person, or by taking what he has, or by taking him. Somehow you want to fulfill yourself because you are unable to bear the incompleteness of who you are. Try hard. It will not get you anywhere. So all I am telling you is, you try everything. You try greed. You try possessiveness. You try love. You try lust. You try what you want. If you realize it's not getting you anywhere, you must be sensible enough to shift. If something is not working and you're going on doing the same thing, then you are an idiot beyond redemption, isn't it? Don't listen to my advice. Try something. If it works, go on that path. If it doesn't work, leave the nonsense and try something else, isn't it? And you will see, none of these things will work. All of them will create a sense of as if it's going to work, but they'll deceive you later. Try hard and see. Don't try in a lukewarm way. Try absolutely. If you try absolutely, within 24 hours you will know. If you try off and on in lukewarm ways, it will take a lifetime to know. Then if there are 24 qualities, you need 24 lifetimes to realize this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. If you try really hard, within 24 hours you will know it doesn't work. Whatever it is, your problem, go all the way into it. You'll see, within 24 hours, this is no good. It will never work. It'll be 100% clear to you. Once it's clear to you, I trust your intelligence. The only thing that I trust is intelligence. Because life is intelligence. The tree is blossoming. It is a certain intelligence. The very earth that you walk upon is intelligent. The air that you breathe is intelligent. One way of looking at life is just an explosion of intelligence. What you call as creation and what you refer to as the creator is the ultimate intelligence, isn't it? That's the only thing you can trust right now. And that will function only if you go all the way. If you go like this, it'll give you a false sense of comfort and solace. You can carry on with these stupid things for a whole lifetime. You know it doesn't work, but it's not intense enough. So give yourself absolutely to whatever nonsense you're doing. Very soon, within a day, you will know it doesn't work. It doesn't work. If you realize it doesn't work, I believe you will shift. Am I wrong? Can I believe that you will shift? Something doesn't work, and you're sure it doesn't work, you will shift. Fulfillment, completeness is not going to happen by getting this or getting that. It'll only happen when this piece of life is alive to its core. That